5. I was on a bare, grassy hillside scattered with stones, and that was impossible. I could see for miles in every direction, and that too was impossible. I started to laugh. It wasn't that it was funny. It was just that if I laughed, it wasn't serious. I've heard that people who get shot start laughing sometimes, that they'll tell you they're fine even when they're holding their guts in with their hands. As it happens, I knew exactly where I was, or at least I knew what where I was, if that makes any sense. It was an Appalachian bald. I only know this because of Aunt Kate, and I'm probably getting it wrong, but as I understand it, it's a thing that happens in the southern mountains, where you get the top of a hill that ought to be covered in trees, and instead, it's all grass, as if someone has been lugging a lawnmower up a few thousand feet. There's no reason for it to be grass, and nobody's quite sure why it's not a forest. Hence the name Bald. Our family vacations to the Great Smoky Mountains involved visiting a bunch of balds. I didn't really mind. After a couple of days in Pigeon Forge, home of hillbilly mini golf, hillbilly laser tag, and hillbilly bumper cars, a bare grass hillside started to seem positively restful. And it made Aunt Kate really happy. There's a bunch of plants that only grow on balds, so botanists get very excited and narrate the plant life while they wander around on their knees. Ooh, creeping St. John's wort, and so forth. I say all this to indicate that I know an Appalachian bald when I see one, or at least a bald of some sort. I guess it's possible I wasn't in the Appalachians after all, since, as I may have mentioned earlier, this was completely impossible. There aren't any balds near my grandmother's house. There aren't any mountains near my grandmother's house. There are very gentle hills, sometimes cut away into miniature river valleys. There are absolutely, positively, not the sort of hills where you stand on top and gaze over the landscape and see the horizon tinted blue-orange in the distance. I knelt atop the bald and gazed at the blue-orange horizon. "This is fucked up," I told Bongo. Bongo was looking around warily. His ears were up and alert as if he was hearing something. When I spoke, his tail wagged once in acknowledgement, but he was holding it in the stiffly upright curl of a dog on the job. White stones littered the grass. I don't know much about rocks. If Aunt Kate had been a geologist, I could probably talk for hours about glacial remnants and thrust faults, but she wasn't. So, hey, they were big white rocks. Right, geography lesson over. I was somewhere impossible. I dug my knuckles into the grass and touched dirt. The world was not painted on some kind of enormous canvas designed to fool random dog walkers. So my options were that I was dreaming, hallucinating, or that Bongo and I had just walked a few hundred miles in 20 minutes. "Or aliens," I told Bongo. "Maybe we've had missing time. Maybe we were abducted. Did you get probed?" "I don't think I got probed." My nether regions did not feel any different than they normally felt. I assume you notice that sort of thing. I stood up. Nothing much happened. I turned in a circle, passing the leash from hand to hand. Behind me, where we had come up, stood the tunnel of trees. There were thin, scruffy bushes around the entrance. They hadn't leafed out yet, or perhaps they were dead. The tunnel seemed very small and very steep. I had a hard time believing that I'd climbed it at all, and getting back down was going to be an experience. It seemed to go straight down, surrounded by the bare branches, which were layered densely on top of one another until they faded together like dark smoke. If I tried to go back down through the bushes instead, I was going to get flayed alive by twigs, assuming I could get through them at all. I turned away from the tunnel and looked out across the bald. On two sides, it seemed to fall away sharply, but the third side, opposite the tunnel, stretched out in a gentle slope, littered with stones. Bongo was facing that direction, and when I took a step, he strode out as if we were going for a perfectly normal walk. His ears and tail were still up, though, and I had the impression that he was thinking very hard about something. Or, more accurately, that his nose was thinking very hard about something. Bongo's nose is far more intelligent than the rest of him, and I believe it uses his brain primarily as a counterweight. His nose was working now, nostrils flaring in and out. Well, I reasoned that either one of two things was going to happen. Either I would go down the tunnel and be in the woods behind my grandmother's house, in which case either my understanding of geography was completely and utterly messed up or something weird was going on. Or I would go down the tunnel and discover myself somewhere in the Great Smoky Mountains and have to walk to a ranger station and get a lift to a rental car place so that I could drive home. And yes, something weird would be going on. Neither of these situations seemed likely to change if I went forward and investigated the rest of the bald for 20 minutes. And for all I knew, there would be a sign from the Park Service saying, "This is an amazing optical illusion, and you are actually at sea level." We went forward. A little breeze sighed over the grass, rippling it in fine straw-colored waves. When I looked into the distance, I saw more hills. They had the same dark, smoke-like quality of bare branches as the ones around the tunnel. And the ones around my grandmother's house, for that matter. As my heart slowed from my run up the hill, I began to think that I was being stupid. I could still be behind my grandmother's house. It's totally possible. I'm going to go into Ponsboro and say, "Did you know there's a bald there?" And they're going to look at me like I'm stupid and say, "Yeah, obviously, that's Moonshine Hill," or something like that. And maybe I'll just have been looking in completely the wrong place all this time and didn't notice the hill. And then I'm going to feel like an idiot for thinking that it was aliens. One's own idiocy is often a cheering thought. I veered to the left, wondering if I'd be able to see my grandmother's house, which would make me feel better about the whole thing. Bongo gave me one of his human-going-the-wrong-way looks, but allowed himself to be led to the edge of the bald. His nose stayed pointing in the original direction, though, which provided an interesting physics lesson in how a hound's body can rotate around a fixed point. I got to the edge, such as it was, at least the point where the slope became steep enough that I didn't feel like going any farther, and saw more bare trees. Rank upon rank. No roads, not that that meant anything. The trees could be in the way. All those dark trees, sinking down into a valley and rising up again into another hill, and another, a whole circle of hills around this one, hung with endless, colorless trees. I'll say, "Did you know there's a whole bunch of hills?" And they'll say, "Yeah, obviously. That's the Moonshine Range. You're in hill country. What did you expect?" And I'll feel like an even bigger idiot. I dug my nails into my palms. I wasn't in hill country. I knew I wasn't. But, well, either I was wrong or the hills were. And while I have known people, and dated at least one, who would stubbornly maintain that they were right in the face of geography, I am not one of them, which is why we're no longer dating, among other reasons. "Right," I said. "I'm in hill country." Bongo strained at the leash, nose working. I let him lead across the bald, through the gray rocks. A shape coming out from under one rock startled me badly for a minute, until I realized that it was a small tree, or had been at some point in the distant past. It was the bleached gray-white color of dead wood, and it twisted around like a snake, gnarled by wind and weather. Aunt Kate would have been thrilled by it, I'm sure. A tree growing on a bald, where trees were supposed to grow but didn't. I was less thrilled. It looked diseased. Bongo was still going forward. His head was up, not down. Not tracking, but scanning for something. Maybe a bird. I remembered birds in the last bald. Little warbly things that buzzed, each buzz going up and up like a question. I couldn't hear any birds here. Not even the apparently invisible woodpeckers that seemed to fill the woods around Grandma's house. Tap, 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 tapping. Well, a woodpecker wouldn't find much to eat up here, would it? That one tree wouldn't make a meal for anybody. I glanced over my shoulder toward the tunnel and shrieked. Bongo yanked on the leash in surprise, then turned and cowered behind my legs. He was hoping I would protect him from whatever made me scream, but the end result was that he pulled me off balance, and I fell backward over him, and we landed in a flailing heap on the grass. God, shit, damn, I said, or something like that. We sorted ourselves out. The leash got wrapped around my thigh, and I had to do some unwrapping, complicated by Bongo trying to climb in my lap to make sure that I wasn't mad at him. I felt like an idiot for yelling, but I'd been badly startled when I turned around and saw that on this side, every one of the gray rocks was carved into a shape. The carvings were the same sort as the deer stone in the backyard, but bigger. They had weight, like, oh, those giant stone Olmec heads in South America, say. Some of them even looked a bit like those heads, with leering human faces on them. The style was different, don't get me wrong, but there was the same feeling of mass. I got up and went over to one. It looked as if it went down into the ground instead of sitting on top of it. Hell, maybe it did. There could be weird ridges of rocks sticking up that someone had carved into various shapes. Rocks did that, didn't they? I could have poked it, I suppose, but that would have involved touching one. I didn't want to touch one. It looked like it would be cold, which would be normal for stone, but some part of my brain insisted that it would be warm. Maybe not like a human, but like a lizard lying out in the sun. And then I'd probably have to run screaming. I kept my hands to myself. I'm an editor. I have a vague knowledge of botany gleaned from my aunt and a highly specific knowledge of one particular breed of dog. I don't know anything about archaeology or modern art. I couldn't tell you if the carvings were 10 years old or 10,000. I mean, probably they weren't 10,000. Were there even humans here then? Were there still mammoths wandering around? Probably not mammoths. 10,000 years ago was before the pyramids, but after mammoths, wasn't it? I was a bit hazy on the details. Normally I'd look it up on my phone, but actually, that was a great idea. I took out my phone, turned it on, it was at about 5% power, no signal, and took a photo of the nearest head. It made the camera noise, then immediately shut off. Stupid damn phone. Bongo peed on the dead tree in a meditative fashion. The carved face glared at me. It had bulging eyes and an almost non-existent nose. Its lower lip was pulled down to reveal broad, flat teeth that went most of the way to the ears. It wasn't the most pleasant thing I've ever seen. All the carvings were like that, They weren't all faces. Some of them were animals, like the deer stone, but even the animals were messed up. Their hind legs curled up into their bellies and over their backs, or their mouths were open like they were screaming or panting or laughing. They were elongated and earless, like snakes. A couple had swollen bellies and long breasts that wrapped around their bodies like their legs. I put an involuntary arm across my chest. It was painful just to look at that. As a modern art installation, it was grotesquely effective. As prehistoric art, well, I'd wonder a bit about the people who made them. Also, I'd wonder why there wasn't a park ranger standing over them to slap anybody who got out a can of spray paint. I'm pretty sure that you can't just have ancient ruins lying around without some idiot tagging the things. I'll say, "Hey, guys, I was up on those hills that are apparently in my backyard, and there's all these carved rocks." And they'll say, "Oh, yeah, that's a state historic site. The Moonshine Hillstones. Didn't you see the sign?" And I'll say, "Isn't there supposed to be a ranger or something?" And they'll say, "Well, you know, budget cuts." And we'll nod sadly about the way local government cuts things like this, and also education. But the police department gets an armored assault vehicle, even though they mostly deal with rogue cows. I went a little farther through the stones. Bongo was getting annoyed with my frequent stops, but really, these were fascinating. Like gargoyles, only not as friendly. You got the impression that gargoyles were there to chase away evil spirits. These things looked like they were there to chase away gargoyles. A whole line of them lay flat on the grass in front of me, and here I could tell that they actually went underground, either partially buried or actually anchored into the hill itself. Two were pretty clearly supposed to be humans. They lay curled up on their sides, arms over their heads, as if they were sleeping or weeping or dead. I couldn't even begin to guess what the other ones were. I took a few steps back, hoping they'd come into focus the way the deerstone had, but they didn't. They were just contorted masses of lines, twisting around in unpleasant, erratic ways. The carver had clearly heard of the golden ratio and wanted no truck with it. For all their abstraction, though, you got the feeling that they were supposed to be alive, the way the snaky animals were alive. They were the creepiest of the lot. Bongo yanked on his leash again. "Fine, fine," I said. "Let's go see what you're after." I felt a bit of a chill turning my back on the carved stones. The flat ones were close enough to one another that I had to walk carefully so as not to touch one. Bongo picked his way between them like a dancer. There were more ahead of us, though. They got bigger as we followed the curve of the bald forward and down, and the carved lines contorted in the corners of my vision. It was all very creepy. I found myself humming tunelessly to ward off the creepiness. If only there had been birds calling or something. But there was just Bongo and me, two little creatures toiling down the grass through the forest of silent stones. "Oh, Susanna," I sang, not very well, "don't you cry for me." I looked behind me again. We'd come far enough down the slope that the top of the bald was no longer visible. Several of the stones were outlined against the sky, dark gray on light gray. "I've come from Alabama with a banjo on my knee." Where on earth had I learned that song first? We sang it in grade school, but I remember knowing different lyrics and getting frustrated that the teacher sang it wrong. They sang, "The sun was so hot, I froze myself." And I knew it as, "The sun so hot, I froze to death." Arguably, I was a morbid child, but I must have gotten that from somewhere. My father used to sing it, I think, or maybe my mother, who had died so long ago that I could hardly remember her. Your mother's probably here under these stones right now. It was such a weird and intrusive thought that I fumbled the chorus. Right. And if I do not find her, then I will surely die. And when I'm dead and buried, oh, Susanna, don't you cry. All the dead are here under the stones. I don't want you to think that I was being mind-controlled or something. It wasn't from outside me. It was just the unpleasant little voice that pops up in the middle of the night to remind you about the stupid thing you did in high school, or to whisper that maybe there's a monster under the bed. But something about the stones and the creepiness and the isolation of this place made it louder. Keep walking, and you'll walk out of the sky and down the hill, down under the ground, among the stones, among the dead. The fuck? I said out loud, which shut the voice up for a second. Bongo glanced back to make sure I wasn't swearing at him, then kept leading me forward. There was a tall stone ahead of us. He seemed to be headed for it. All right, I told him. That far, and then we go back. This place is weirding me out. This place is weirding. This place is weirding. Under the ground, the weirdlings come out to play, and then the sun freezes them into stones, but they'll move again when your back is turned. I started singing again to drown out the thoughts. This was like having the world's strangest anxiety attack. I had a dream the other night when everything was still. The tall stone was much taller than I had thought. The base was set in a deep depression in the ground, perfectly round, like a bowl. Gray rocks stood all around the lip of the circle, facing inward, like a knee-high Stonehenge. I thought I saw Susanna Deer a-coming down the hill. There may have been a seep in the depression. Mosses grew in a thick blanket around the base of the stone, shaded by tiny green ferns. I don't know my ferns. They all look alike to me. Aunt Kate said it wasn't worth bothering unless you really wanted to get into spores. I do remember that one was called Ebony Spleenwort because I always thought the name was funny, particularly since it was a green fern and not ebony at all. A buckwheat cake was in her mouth. A tear was in her eye. The tall monolith? Dolmen? Big-ass rock? Was the only one that wasn't carved into some unpleasant shape. There were two lines near the top, broken in the middle, a bit like eyes. Otherwise, it was smooth and white. Bongo, having come this far, had stopped. He stared at the rock and gave the thinnest thread of a whine. Whatever he had been following, he hadn't expected it to be this. Would the surface of the monolith feel rough, like sandpaper, or polished smooth? It didn't reflect as if it were polished. I put a hand on one of the low rocks and used it to lower myself to the ground on the lip of the bowl. Bongo whined again. More loudly. Says I, I'm coming from the south. Susanna, don't you cry. The monolith was carved, I could see now. It was very faint, that was all. The lines swirled up and around and down, looking like something. I couldn't quite make out what it was supposed to represent. The bowl was steeper than it looked. I was afraid that I was going to roll down and smack into the monolith. That was one way to tell if it was smooth or rough, but I didn't want to find out with my face. I wanted to run my palms over it and feel the chisel marks on my fingers. Then I would be able to tell what the carving represented. Then perhaps I could put my cheek against it and feel the coldness of the stone growing warm underneath my skin. And through the stone pressing down into the other place, the vorish dome under the ground, the other place where the dead go. Bongo wouldn't leave the lip. He pulled back against the leash until the collar was up around his ears. "Come on, you stupid fucking dog," I snarled, and my voice was harsh and grating, and what the hell was I doing? I blinked a few times. I was standing partway down the depression in the ground. My hand felt greasy where I'd touched one of the carved rocks. The moss was too yielding underfoot, as if I were leaving bruises. "Jesus," I said. "Jesus." I don't know what had come over me. I hauled myself out of the depression, even though I had to touch the gray stone again. I'll be honest, I was nearly expecting it to bite me. Bongo pressed so close to my thigh that I nearly fell over him again. His ears were down, and his tail was tucked, and he was making little champing motions with his mouth. "Right," I said. "Right. You're my good dog. I'm sorry I yelled." I wiped my hands on the seat of my jeans and glanced over my shoulder at the tall white monolith. It gazed eyelessly over my head. Why had I wanted to touch it? Bongo whined again. I knelt down right there, even though the presence of the stone made my skin crawl, and pressed my forehead against his. You have to reassure dogs right away. They don't have a good sense of time, and they don't link past behavior to the present. Why had I yelled at my dog anyway? What had come over me? "Go down the hillside, out of the sky, under the ground, through the stone to the gray place." "You're a good dog," I said to Bongo. "A good, good dog." He sighed and leaned into me. "You said it. Come on, buddy. Let's get out of here." We made our way back up the hill. The voice in my head buzzed like a gnat, growing more distant as I shoved it down, like the desire to jump fading as you stepped away from the edge. The rocks stared at us as we passed. The flat, twisted stones pulsed like a moiré pattern. I made faces like the faces on the rocks, and I twisted myself about like the twisted ones, and I lay down flat on the ground like the dead ones. I inhaled sharply. Christ, I'm stupid. This is what Cotgrave was writing about. Probably you're thinking I'm an idiot not to have made the connection before. But Cotgrave's diary was decades old, and honestly, I'd been thinking more about its relation to my grandmother. You don't expect that ramblings of a sad old man to suddenly turn up in real life. I felt like I'd been kicked in the chest. But that was stupid, too. Of course Cotgrave must have known about this place. It was practically in his own backyard. And there was the deerstone actually in the garden. The deerstone had to have come from up here. He must have found a small one that wasn't buried and carried it back home. Unless he carved them himself. That's possible, isn't it? This was an unsettling thought. I couldn't reconcile the image of the tired old man who had sat in a chair reading the newspaper with whatever mad artist had created the field of carvings. You couldn't possibly create something like that and then wander around like a normal person, going to the grocery store and worrying about heart medication and paying the water bill. Could you? Serial killers do it all the time. No, that's unfair. It's not like these are actually hurting people. They're just creepy, that's all. Whoever made these is a sort of goth genius, that's all. Like H.R. Giger, or that guy who does the album covers with all the super pale people in the skulls. Still, lying down like the dead ones, I could just about see. In order to make faces like the faces in these rocks, though, you'd have to be able to lick your own eyelids. And I don't think any person with bones could twist themselves about like the twisted ones. It can't be done, I told Bongo. I tried to make a face like the one in the nearest carving. Its lower jaw was distended, like a snake about to swallow, and its eyes bulged. See? Look. I opened my eyes and mouth as wide as I could, and wider, wider, wide enough to eat the sun. This is the one that puts the stars out when the shadows go over them. This one's eyes can see in the gray that's left behind after even the darkness is eaten. Oh, shit. I tried to close my mouth, and it didn't want to close. What the hell is going on? Oh my God, Aunt Kate always said my face would freeze like that, and holy shit, I think it is. I put my hand up under my chin and shoved it up. My teeth slammed together. The hinge of my jaw ached, like when you get dental work and they hold your mouth open for an hour. Right, I said in a high, panicky voice. Don't taunt the evil rocks. And I bolted past the last of the stones with Bongo running beside me, and I didn't stop until I saw the tunnel of trees. Relief hit me so strongly that I thought for a minute my knees were going to buckle. I hadn't realized how frightened I'd been that the tunnel would be gone. Of course it isn't. This is perfectly normal. Absolutely nothing weird going on here. I'll go into town and say, so there's this tall white stone, and they'll say, oh yeah, that's the moonshine monolith. And I'll order a coffee with a shot of Irish cream syrup and sit down and look it up on the internet, and there'll be a whole page about how the rocks were carved in the 1700s by a local mason called Zebediah or Asa or some other old-fashioned name. And I just had a weird spasm in that one muscle. The temporomandibular what's it? The one that goes out sometimes and clicks? Because I was making a face at this stupid rock, and not because the rock was talking in my head and trying to get me to imitate it, not at all, because that would be crazy. I went down the tunnel of trees, half on my feet and half on my ass, and Bongo slithered and scrabbled down with me. By the time I got to the bottom, I was pretty much willing to chalk up the incident with the stones to the power of suggestion. It was weird and creepy, and you were already on edge, and the line from that journal just set you off, that's all. And staying in that house would disorder anyone's nerves. Focus on the things that are actually real, like the fact that Cotgrave's journal talked about the carved rocks. We hurried back through the trees. The way seemed shorter, probably because Bongo knew that dinner awaited him at the house and was suddenly all business. I wanted nothing more than to run into the bedroom and snatch up Cotgrave's journal, but Bongo needed water, and for that matter, so did I. And I was covered in twigs and dust, and my skin still felt greasy where I'd touched the stones. So I got us both water and then took a shower and scrubbed down with a bar of gritty yellow soap that grandmother had stashed in a bathroom drawer. I was drying off when somebody rang the doorbell and I let out a shriek. The door slammed open. Jesus, cried a voice. Ye being murdered? Where you at, honey? I'll get 'em. And that is how I met Foxy.